Hello and welcome to Radio Edutalk. This is David Noble in Dalgety Bay in Fife, and I'm delighted to welcome to the show today Darren Begley and Hina Hashmi, who are MEd students at the University of Dundee. Hello Darren, hello Hina.
Hi.
Hi there.
It's great to have you on the show, and in a moment we're going to find out a bit more about how the distance MEd works at Dundee University, and then also hear a little bit about your studies within the course and the research that you're considering or you've already embarked upon. But just starting off with Darren and then Hina, could you give us a kind of brief background to who you are and what you do?
Yeah, sure. Okay, so good morning everyone. So my name is Darren Begley, as I said. I'm based out in Japan, and I live in Fuji City, which is in just sort of maybe about 2 hours south of Tokyo. I live just actually at the very like foot of the mountain, so it's quite nice. It's quite beautiful out here. I am teaching English as like a sort of English as a second language in that sort of role. In a high school out here, and I've been doing that for about 5 years in total, four of which I've been in Japan, and I did about a year and a little bit out in Singapore as well in a sort of similar role. I've been out in Asia for maybe five, getting on 6 years now, and it's all been in a sort of English as a second language role. And I took this master's course to sort of go on and kick on a little bit more in a career and move on to sort of like the next stage of teaching. I would like to sort of go into teaching, hopefully maybe back in Europe or Scotland one day. So this master's course is just to sort of to get me the qualifications I need to move into the school setup.
That's great, Darren. And what about yourself, Hina? What's your background and what's led you on to the MEd?
I'm actually the total opposite of Darren. I did my PGD in Scotland, taught in Scotland for a couple of years, but I grew up as an expat. I've always lived abroad. So as soon as I had my 2 years experience, I took my first international posting in a school in Mexico City. Now I moved from Canusi to Mexico City. And I was there for just over 4 years in an IB school as the head of science. And then I decided to move to a bigger school a bit closer to home. So I've been in Istanbul here for a year, again teaching IB science. So I teach the MYP, which is middle school science, and then the diploma program, which is for the sixth formers pre-university courses in biology, environmental systems, and hopefully sports science and nutrition next year. Okay. And the reason I wanted to take this MEd was having had the opportunity to move into middle management, I realized that, to be honest, I am ambitious, and this seemed to be a perfect way for me to get the academic qualifications I needed in order to progress to the next level of management.
No, I'll just say at this point that this is a pre-recorded show, so it's not a live broadcast, but if you have got any comments or questions for Hina or Darren, then you can get in touch in the usual ways via Twitter or email, and we'll pass them on. So to start off with, again, maybe going back to Darren, then, a couple of things. What attracted you to Dundee and their MEd in the first instance, and can you give us an idea about how distance learning works? I mean, many listeners will have experience of it, but maybe not in the year 2015. So how does that all operate these days?
Okay. Well, I did undergrad at Dundee maybe like 5 years ago or 6 years ago or something, and it was really enjoyed up there. I'm from Glasgow, but I moved up to Dundee for the undergrad. So I really had a nice sort of memory of my time at the University of Dundee. So it was really enjoyable. And then I was sort of looking for some courses here, and I had looked at the possibility of moving back to Scotland to do the MEd full time somewhere, just over a year or 2 years. but it wasn't really practical. So the University of Dundee, I think I'm right in saying, is the only course in the UK which has the MED, which is tied to the IB curriculum, or has some sort of connection with the IB curriculum, IB curriculum. Oh, sorry.
Sorry, Dan, I was just agreeing with you there. It's the only one that I could find, because I wanted that tie-in as well.
Oh, yeah, okay, sorry. Yeah, so I think that's why I was keen to do it. And I think the other universities in Scotland certainly didn't have a distance learning MED. You would have had to do it full-time, I think, too. So I think that was my two main reasons for doing it over here. So that I could still work in Japan and be out here and still get the qualifications I needed.
And Hina, can you just expand on then what it means that this tie-in with the IB and in what ways does that actually assist you with developing your own teaching practice?
One of the things that the IB really, really are pushing is this constant reflection, this constant professional development. So by taking the MED with through Dundee, you can actually also get certification with the IB organisation to show that you are a fully qualified IB teacher in a particular subject, which looks really good. If you're looking for international schools, that's the kind of thing that they look for.
Excuse my ignorance, but you would have, obviously, you would have teachers in IB schools around the world where they wouldn't have a formal IB qualification, but this gives you an opportunity to work towards and indeed gain the qualification, and therefore you're on a sort of separate pathway or in some kind of enhanced pathway for your future career.
I think what it does is just gives you an added element to your resume. That's what it does. It gives you maybe a little bit of an advantage over other candidates. Might have been teaching the IB, but don't seem to have sort of maybe the qualifications or the paperwork to show that they've taken that extra step forward with their own professional development.
And Darren, can you talk about how the distance learning aspect works then? You know, how do you learn? How do you interact with tutors and indeed fellow students such as Hina, and when it comes to the actual assessments, is it still very much kind of academic paper based, or is there a kind of digital or IT element to that?
Okay. Well, in terms of the learning of the course, it's strictly online. So we lectures are posted up maybe at the beginning of the course. So there's a sort of lecture program to follow, and there's quite a extensive reading list and whatnot is put forward, and we sort of work through it. And the module I'm working on just now, it's a research module, and there's a really large study guide with it, and it's sort of everything that the course is planning to cover. So you can sort of work through that, but there's there's no set dates or anything for that. So you're just sort of working through each unit at your own pace. But on top of that, there's quite a large network of communication tools. So there's like a blog. There is another kind of like a discussion board where some tutors or some other students will post links to articles they've read or books with a couple of questions, and other students are invited to come on and share. And I think for me that's the best part of it, being able to share your work with students or being able to talk to other students about it. Like just sort of sitting here myself in front of the computer every night reading off a screen can become a bit of a challenge, a bit solitary, can get a little bit difficult sometimes, just so that I enjoy that part of it, the sort of going over the discussion board materials with students just to check that I'm on the right path or to ask any other questions and sort of share the work you're doing. I think that sort of helps a little bit too.
And Hina, what are your own experiences then of distance learning? How do you go about tackling a course or a module?
Right. So I've done two of the 3 years, and this is my dissertation year. So I've done four modules now, and it's the same as what Aaron said. You have on your virtual learning environment, you get given a big module guide with lots of material to read through, and then you get given your assessment for that module. And I would say the assessment is still quite traditional. It's still either a literature review or a piece of action research that's underpinned by current literature or something like that. But what I really enjoy is that you have the flexibility to work around your schedule, because we are, I would say, the majority of the people on the course are still teaching full-time or working full-time. If you learn to plan your time very quickly, and you can get through the material at a reasonable pace without taking too much of your time away from your full-time job, because you have, there's no sort of set deadlines. There is a wee bit of flexibility with the, and of course with the understanding it is for full-time people, which I find really helpful.
And you have got kind of writing experience yourself, you know, haven't you? You've written, or you've published science textbooks. Can you tell us a little bit about that? Because from my kind of background reading, it seems to combine language learning with obviously learning around science. And did you do any research around that? You know, you're now into a kind of brand new research topic, as I understand.
Yeah, I did actually. So one of the areas that I'm really interested in is content and language integrated learning. Something that actually the research module that Darren's about to start, I just finished a negotiated study module looking at how international schools provide language instruction in the second language and how effective it is for mainstream subjects. Something that's really interesting, because even though we're like, as an international teacher, you still make the assumption that the students that you work with understand you as if you were speaking to them in your mother tongue and it's their mother tongue, when actually language in itself can be quite a challenge for students to take in all the knowledge you're trying to impart to them. They're trying to figure that out before they even start understanding the concepts that you're trying to put across. So one of the things I found really helpful from the MEd course was thinking, before I started writing the textbooks and structuring the textbooks, was thinking about what can I figure out the language, the use of language, and how to present the language in such a way that I'm teaching language alongside teaching science. So that's the idea, that you're both a language teacher and a mainstream instructor at the same time. And I don't think I would have done as good a job if I hadn't had the background, the tools that are given to me as part of the MEd process, and being very critical and reflective about why I'm doing something and what I want to achieve from something, and the different methodologies to get the best out of that. So that's quite good.
And can you tell us then what your kind of developing idea, as I understand it, is for your dissertation? It's around creating a sort of sustainable education model within a refugee camp in Turkey.
Yeah, so I'm sure everybody's aware at the moment there is a refugee crisis, and Turkey's on the front line of it. And, you know, it's something that I'm exposed to every day, just on the walk from my flat to the bus. There's over 300,000 refugees, Syrian refugees, legally registered. So there's probably more than that in Istanbul alone, over 2 million in Turkey. And from what seems to be happening on a global scale, it seems like we're going to be having refugees in the country a long time, stuck in these refugee camps, which of course is harming the children's education. So the area of interest I'm looking at is looking at how you can train volunteers within the refugee camps themselves to become teachers and teacher trainers, to go on and train other people within the refugee camp, go on and give classes, so on and so forth, working with local schools and NGOs to hopefully eventually integrate students into the local schooling system, but making it really grassroots thing where it comes from the people inside the camp. It's not people from outside going in and imposing what their idea of education should be on these displaced people.
Now, if you don't mind, Tina, we'll hear a bit about some of Darren's recent writing and come back to this dissertation in a moment. You're talking about being in the third year, so I would imagine that you've done the kind of ontology, epistemology, methodology, etc. I came out in a cold sweat this afternoon when I started reading again about that. I just, for your information, I characterise it as half a doctorate back about 3 or 4 years ago. I got to the PGD stage or pulled out at that stage, and I did actually pass that paper as I recall. But Darren, how are you finding this kind of, I'd assume, quite weighty reading it would be for all of us? Is this all new to you, this kind of reading around the social sciences and research and having to actually take big steps into who you are as a person and what you understand to exist and what the nature of knowledge is and such like? How have you found that experience, first of all?
As you say, it's a little bit challenging. So can I just say quickly first, I think that dissertation sounds really incredible. It sounds really interesting. That sounds wonderful. Regarding this semester, we're doing the research methods module, and like you say, it can be, how can I put it politely, it can be a challenge, to say the least. But we're still in the very early stages. Even just coming to terms with the terminology, like ontology, methodology, all these things, it really tests my will to carry on reading these long texts. So it can be a little bit of a challenge.
When you go down.
Yeah. I just finished reading one paper, and I think it might be one of the papers I sent to you, and it's really very philosophical, and that for me is, I'm sort of struggling to connect that to what I'm planning to study later or what I would like to do later. And it's just basically we're reading lots about putting into context and putting into ideas social reality or the other side of it, the quantitative side of it, whereas they have only one reality, whereas the qualitative researchers, they have lots of multiple realities based on the perceptions of the person who is experiencing such reality. And I mean, that I just sort of, sometimes it can be interesting, but sometimes it can be very, very dry and a little bit of a challenge. But I guess, I mean, I'm sure it's going to be beneficial to get it done, but I'm not quite looking forward to a 6,000 word essay on this later in the semester.
Hina, I would imagine that when you're putting forward your dissertation plan and indeed in the final write-up, you'll have to refer to your ontological position, etc. I suppose to then feed through to what your methodology is and indeed your methods and data sources. So without keeping things too dry, can you give us an idea about where you're at with your research plan and how you might, for example, about identifying data sources and actually what methods you might use to get the data around this issue of sort of sustainable education for refugees?
Yeah, totally. Before I do, though, I just want to say something, and also for Darren and anybody else that is listening, I would like to point out that I have found this MEd incredibly difficult, and I think it's the first time in my life I've truly felt stupid at points, really. And I think that's quite normal. I was trained quantitatively. My first further education undergraduate degrees and honours degrees and whatnot are all as a scientist. And having to grapple with this idea that knowledge can be constructed from people's thoughts, which what social science seems to be, it really is a struggle for me. And there were times where I was Skyping with my tutor in absolute tears, going, I just don't get it. What's wrong with me? I always thought I was smart, but it's not. I've just had to do, you know, I'm going through this massive paradigm shift of trying to think from a completely different perspective. So for Darren and anyone else out there, it's okay. I also feel like this.
Thank you.
As part of me, in terms of my research, there isn't that much research in this area, which is one of the reasons I was drawn to this area. Most of the information that's available seems to come from NGOs such as the UNHCR or UNICEF or Save the Children, and theirs tends to be quantitative, very straight facts and figures. This is how many kids are getting schooling. This is what level of schooling they're getting. There have been a couple of interesting papers which looked at outside NGOs coming into a refugee camp. This one was specifically in Iraq, and it was an American NGO, and they were coming in, and the materials that we were using, this study found out, were incredibly subversive and controversial, because of course they were putting forward a very distinctive perspective on the sort of crisis that the refugees were experiencing at that time. So I was drawn to it from that point of view, as in, well, A, there doesn't seem to be that much there, and B, I really want my research to have a practical value. That's something really important to me. One of the things I've realized through the last couple of years is that it's very easy sort of to get drawn up into theoretical and the abstract. I'm a very pragmatic person, and I need to know that what I'm doing will make a difference, a practical day-to-day difference in some way.
Mm-hmm. And Darren, you kindly shared a paper that you recently wrote as part of the M.Ed. It's a shame we don't have too much time to discuss it. It was fascinating. Really enjoyed reading about it. Somebody that's never travelled out to Japan at all. Can you take us through the kind of key points of the paper? It was around kind of the internationally conscious student, around kind of globalisation. But can you maybe just start by sort of setting the context about, I suppose, the experience of education for Japanese students, and maybe their kind of lack of exposure within the education system to whether it's Western values or other values and cultures?
Yeah, okay, I'll try not to keep you too long here. Please interrupt me if I'm rabbiting on.
No, on you go, Dan, because it's all great stuff.
What I had noticed in the first module of the first year of the first module was that a lot of the teachers we'd been working with and the tutors had been talking about how their classrooms were these like sort of dynamic environments where they do lots of different styles of group work and where the students are really interested and engaged in all sorts of different things. And that kind of system doesn't really happen much out in Japan. It's kind of unusual. And a large part of the school in here, being a teacher in Japan and the education itself, is very serious. There's a huge focus on education. But when you go into a classroom, as someone who grew up in Scotland and was used to a very different school environment, as a student, here, I mean, 99% of the lessons go along the line of the teacher will read from a textbook, or the teacher will just completely cover the chalkboard in messages and notes, and he'll just almost kind of like a lecture. And the students will basically just absorb it and take down notes. They'll copy it almost identically. So there was a huge difference. And in terms of my role, I teach English, and I also try to do it with opening up the like sort of Western culture to them. To the students, so we often talk about what's going on in the world and things like that. But I had noticed that students really, they're very, very smart students. I mean, in Japan, the general scores of math and science is a lot higher than most European countries. I think it's one of the highest in the world, actually. But they're sort of ignorant in a sense to the rest of the world. They don't know much about the rest of the world. I mean, I would tell the students, yeah, you know, I live in Scotland, and not many of them would know where Scotland is. You know, they would know one or two small snippets of information, but they wouldn't know anything about it. Like, whereas we, as students, would know kind of a bit more about Japan. So I tried to do it for my paper on international education. I tried to sort of look at these things and look at the differences compared to what our perception of what good education should be and what we should be aiming for as educators compared to what the system is like in Japan. And I looked at the lack of international consciousness, and I looked at the role of globalization and how important it is in European or Western countries, and how it's sort of lacking in Japan. And so it was kind of interesting. I felt that when there was often an idea in some of the source material that I had read that students were apathetic to it, or students were not interested in learning about the outside world. And while that's true to an extent, there is always a small percentage of the classroom who are a bit more sort of disinterested with English or with cultural studies. Most of the students, when you open it up to them and when you put it to them in a context that they can relate to, they really enjoyed it, I found. So it was really quite an interesting paper, and I enjoyed writing it. It was a little bit challenging too, mind you, but I found the differences to be I was quite surprised by the differences. Speaking to teachers who I had met on the course, fellow students, and my lecturers, who were telling me, like, oh, we're aiming for this and that, whereas the school set up in Japan is almost the polar opposite of the way we teach, or the way we are taught to teach.
And what you did, Dan, if I'm right in saying it, was you set up a project to try and increase international consciousness. That's like a grand idea, but also just to improve engagement, I think, in the classroom. And am I right in saying you tried out some maybe UK or Western type approaches, like peer assessment and group learning, and this was across five lessons or so? Can you just briefly take us through, you know, what the project was, and you know, whether you felt it had an impact?
Whether I felt it, you'd need to ask the students. I think the project we tried was basically, as we're saying, was to try and get them into a more to get them to use English a little bit more, but to use it in a way that we could discuss things about the world, to discuss more international issues. Students don't often, their knowledge of, or the way they study English before, was reading texts and just quoting sentences from the book, and it was kind of not so interesting. So we looked at ways of, I started a sort of programme where just at the beginning of every lesson, I would tell them something that happened in the week, maybe of my experience with meeting some foreigners in Japan, or doing whatever, eating some food from a different country or something. Just something simple at first, and then encouraging the students to try and share something with me, that they had been to somewhere and they had met a foreigner or something like that, just to try and engage them a little bit, or something they had seen on television or something. And then we took it up a little step. Well, we did a kind of speech contest among the seniors in our school. We did a kind of speech contest, and I wouldn't be grading them. I told them that the other students would be listening, and they would grade them. But first we did a sort of practice speech where they wouldn't be given a score. Instead, they would be given sort of like a generic feedback. From maybe three or four students in the class would take down some small notes, and they would do that in Japanese, and they wouldn't be able to do that in English. And they would share their ideas with them, suggesting ways that they thought it was strong, and suggesting ways that it could be better. And then, we would do a sort of, it would be like a sort of peer assessment. And we're also trying some things with like using social media. A lot of students like to use Twitter, and they like to use Skype and other social networking tools. So I try to use that in the classroom a little bit. We tried to use Instagram as well to an extent that that works, but sometimes because there's just so much material on those sort of things, students can sometimes get a little bit cheeky with it and spend the whole day cruising around, sending photographs and messages to their friends and not doing anything school-worthy. But for the most part, it was really enjoyable, and the students seemed to take more from it than sort of just your standard reading the English textbooks and quoting the sentences. So it was pretty good, I think. But as to the success, I don't know, you'd need to ask someone else.
A possible research project further down the line then. I'm conscious of the time, and Hina, I'd just like to come back to yourself and your own dissertation at the moment. I'm putting you in the spot a little bit here, but it sounds like you're somebody who has kind of high hopes for this piece of research, and in the sense that it's not just to get you through the last part of the M.Ed. So is that something? I know it's early days, but have you thought about dissemination? Have you thought about, you know, is there possible tie-ins further down the line, or people might be interested in running with your findings later on to actually, as you say, have a real kind of pragmatic impact?
Absolutely. It ties back into the school that I'm working at the moment. The school that I'm working in here in Istanbul is a very forward-thinking 21st century school. So it's a paperless school, it's a one-to-one Mac school, and it's a Google school, which means that all our work is done on MacBooks, it's completely paperless, and it's all done through using Google as a platform. So using Google Calendars, using Google Drive, using Google Docs. And another thing is that the real emphasis is on personalized learning and self-directed learning. So I'll tie it in a second. Just stay with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So the idea is that at the moment, what we're doing is we're creating standalone modules for each of our courses that are virtual, kind of like the virtual learning environment that Dundee uses for its distance learners. But imagine a more interactive version of that, where you're instantly connected in real time through something like Google Communities and getting feedback on a piece of work, that you're posting your work or working on it in real time with other collaborators, not just in your school or in your group, but around the world on a Google Doc. And the most important thing is that you are directing your own learning. So you have these modules set up and you work through the modules in your own piece. And as a teacher, I'd never stand at the front of a class and direct teach anymore. Very difficult thing for me to do. I've been teaching like this for 10 years. And when I came to the school a year ago, I had to completely change my approach in the classroom. But one of the things I realized is, we're developing all of these amazing materials, which is for us, for example, we have an entire science course from 11 to 18, all the materials available for it, all online already. I know that Vodafone have a program called Classroom in a Box, which is an amazing box about the size of a coffee table, covered with solar panels, and inside you have 15 iPads and a laptop. During the day, they get charged by the solar panels, and it gives you up to 8 hours of battery time, which you can use in classes that are preloaded with materials. Now, these are being trialed in schools in, I think, Eritrea, South Sudan, and Kenya. So my idea would be eventually to be able to provide teachers within refugee camps. This is a big picture. We've got all the module materials. We've got entire courses online already. We have now the ability to produce the technology and the hardware to put these courses online, and then we'd be able to take them into these places, into the refugee camps, and say, look, you don't need to worry about the materials, you don't need to worry about the resources, you don't even need to worry about, you know, making sure that the kids have materials and resources. Everything is here for you already. Let me now just help you, give you the confidence you need to facilitate this course that kids can direct themselves through.
That's just absolutely mind blowing, Hina.
Yeah, it really is. It's been a huge.
Sounds fantastic.
Yeah, so Like, when I go to work tomorrow, for example, I've got 4 classes, and what I'll do is we'll go in, I'll do a quick 5-10 minutes just going over sort of the kind of stuff that should have been covered, and then I just take a back seat, and they come to me. They'll come to me in groups and ask me to explain something. They'll come to me individually and ask me to go over something, but they are directing their own education. And I think this is the way that education is moving. I think this is the way that learning is moving, to be personalized and self-directed. So I think we have a responsibility as teachers to make sure that that's happening as well.
And it sounds like in terms of the education within the refugee camps, that the big challenge might be the actual infrastructure, not around the content and the technology, but the actual facilitation and the actual physical environments where the learning Absolutely. Might take place.
And that's something hopefully that I want to work on in my dissertation, to equip the people that are already there, that have experienced these situations, to not only deal with this atmosphere, but be able to produce classes and lessons and organise their own people around them to facilitate these courses.
Listen, we've come to the end of the show. I'm sure we could talk on again, but it might be nice to set up another broadcast later on in your two respective sort of stages of the EMED. So best wishes with the next year of your work, Darren and Hina, and as I say, we'll hopefully have you back on the show in the future. So thanks again and take care.